It was a chaotic scene at the Jiffy Mart gas station in Oskaloosa, Iowa, at about 11 p.m. on March 1st, 2018. There, in the parking lot, was squad car after squad car, at least four of them, with their blue and white lights flashing. Sirens blared in the distance as additional police cars pulled up to the scene. Multiple police officers were stationed outside their vehicles, guns drawn, pointing at a silver Chevrolet that was parked in the lot. The car had extensive damage to the windshield, as though someone had smashed it with a baseball bat or a pole. Inside the car were three college students, two in the front seat and a third lying down in the back seat. "Come out with your hands up," the officers yelled. Michael Donaldson and D'Angelo Allen, the two in the front seat, raised their arms. Marquise Todd, the guy lying in the back seat, tried to, but was having a hard time. Michael yelled out to the cops that the guy in the back seat was hurt, that he couldn't come out. But he and D'Angelo emerged from the vehicle, their arms extended into the air. They were immediately handcuffed and searched for weapons, while an ambulance arrived for Marquise. Meanwhile, other officers were responding to a home on North 3rd Street, where the original 911 call had been placed just minutes earlier. The call was for a fight in progress. Lieutenants John Plume and Gary McClume were the first to arrive at the home. When they got there, they saw three men standing in the front yard, waiting for them. They yelled at the men to show us your hands, and then patted each of them down, looking for weapons, but not finding any. One of the men had a cut lip and bloody knuckles. It would soon become obvious that there had been some sort of confrontation between the three men at the gas station and the three men at the home, and that the home was the scene of the crime. In fact, the officers would spend about the next 10 to 12 hours there, trying to get to the bottom of what had happened. They would find blood on the street and in the yard just outside the home. A baseball hat and a lone shoe was also found lying in the yard. The three men at the home were Stanley Van Hemert, his son, Luke Van Hemert, and Luke's friend, Elijah Eli Marcus. Luke told the officers that there had been a minor traffic accident near his house that had led to a physical confrontation, and when Stanley, his dad, said he was going to call the cops, the fight broke up and the guys they were fighting with left. And that was basically it, he said. As for how Marquise, the guy lying in the back of the Chevrolet, currently being treated by paramedics, got injured, he had no ideas. But there was obviously something quite major missing from Luke's story. There had to be. Because a call that had started out as a fight in progress had quickly progressed into a murder investigation after Marquise died from his injuries. He was just 22 years old, one of the stars of his university's basketball team. The cause of death? He had been stabbed three times. There was definitely more to the story, indeed. This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 84. The very day after Marquise's death, a candlelight vigil was held after his school's basketball team played their first game without him. Even though it was spring break, the gym was packed. Nick Rule, the director of student athletics at William Penn University, told the Des Moines Register that even though Marquise's teammates had barely slept upon hearing the news, they had still wanted to play in order to honor him. Rule said Marquise was always smiling, was a really nice, bright, hardworking guy. If every person in the world was like Marquise, it would just be the most amazing place ever, he said. 2 weeks later, on March 14th, 2018, authorities announced that they had made an arrest in the case.
Well, good afternoon. My name is SAC Mike Motzinger with the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation. This is Oskaloosa Police Chief Jake McGee. We're here to do an update on the death investigation that occurred here back on March 1st. On March 14th, this morning, members of the Oskaloosa Police Department, the Marion County Sheriff's Office, arrested Luke Van Emmert, 23, of 603 North 3rd Street here in Oskaloosa. Van Emmert was charged with one count of murder in the second degree. He is currently being held in the Mahaska County Jail on $500,000 cash-only bond. Van Emmert was taken into custody without incident at approximately 10 a.m. this morning at his place of employment in Pella, Iowa. The Office of the State Medical Examiner's Office in Ankeny conducted the autopsy. The cause of death was ruled a stab wound to the chest, and the manner of death has been ruled a homicide.
Luke Van Emmert was arrested and charged with second-degree murder. But even though they had made an arrest, they made a plea to the public to come forward if they had seen anything or knew anything more about what had happened.
As law enforcement officers, we take an oath to gather truth and facts on cases. All we ask the public for now is not misinformation, not spreading of rumors, but if they actually have factual information, they actually witnessed the incident or were present there, to please come forward and cooperate with law enforcement.
Luke pleaded not guilty to the charges, and so his murder trial began in April 2019. He was facing up to 50 years in prison. There was hope that Marquise's loved ones would finally find out what had happened to him that night, but there would definitely be challenges for the prosecution. The murder weapon had never been found, so in essence, they had no idea what had been used to stab Marquise, and there were differing eyewitness accounts, depending on who was asked. But prosecutors were intent on proving that Luke was the one who stabbed Marquise and that he wasn't on the defense when doing it. The jury would seemingly have a lot to figure out. The first witness for the state was Michael Donaldson. Michael testified that he attended William Penn University along with Marquise and their other friend, D'Angelo Allen. Michael, D'Angelo, and Marquise were all best friends. They were on the William Penn basketball team together, and they constantly hung out. The night of March 1st, 2018 was no exception. All three guys had been hanging out and playing a video game in Marquise's dorm room when around 10 p.m., Michael decided to leave and go to the local Jiffy Mart gas station so he could pick up a drink and some snacks. As he was driving through a residential neighborhood, he came up behind a silver Jeep that was driving less than 10 miles per hour in front of him. He testified that he went around the Jeep, but that they then sped up and went around him and then reduced their speed to about 10 miles per hour again. He tried to go around them again, but they cut him off and blocked him. He testified that he didn't feel the impact of the cars hitting each other, but he later saw damage to the car, so he knows that they did. Both cars came to a stop. Two guys got out of the Jeep and approached his car, yelling and screaming at him. He did not know either of them. He identified Luke Van Emmert, seated at the defense table, as one of those guys. He said Luke got out from the driver's side and the other guy, whom he described as having red hair, that he now knows as Eli Marcus, got out from the passenger side.
They started approaching my car, yelling. I couldn't make out what they were saying. One of the guys smacked my hood.
Which one?
The redhead guy.
Okay.
And then I proceeded to back out.
And why did you back out?
Because I see two guys approaching my car, screaming at me, you know.
So. Could you have gone forward instead without getting their car again, I guess?
No, sir.
So what were you feeling at that point?
Just get out of there.
He described driving a little bit ahead and pulling over so he could let them pass. He wanted them to just leave the area so he could keep going to the gas station. He waited about 3 to 5 minutes before he started driving again, heading towards Jiffy. As he drove, he kept looking for the Jeep, but didn't see it. Then, suddenly, someone threw a rock at his windshield. He hit the brakes and came to a complete stop. He then saw Luke approach his car again. This time, he had a pole, and he hit the driver's side window with it, smashing the windshield. A photo of Michael's vehicle was shown to the jury, with the windshield glass broken in two places. Michael identified one area as where the rock hit and another as where the pole hit. He said he did a three-point turn to get out of there and headed back to the dorms. He wanted to get D'Angelo and Marquise so he could go back there to see why Luke and Eli did what they did and to get them to pay for the damage to his car. When he got back to the dorm, he told them that someone had hit his car with a rock and a pole and told them to come with him. They all got back into his car and he drove the same route as before. He saw the silver Jeep in a driveway of a small blue house. There was an older man standing outside, and Eli, the guy with the red hair, was standing next to him. They parked the car on the street and got out. He said he started talking to the older man, telling him that someone who had been driving the Jeep had hit his car with a rock and a pole. "Who's going to pay for it?" he asked. But the older man just walked away and didn't answer him. Marquise then asked the older man where he was going. Michael said he then saw Luke run over, charging and yelling at Marquise. They started scuffling. Michael and Eli then started scuffling too. Eli then ran away from him, but D'Angelo chased after him, and then they started scuffling. When asked if he or his friends had any weapons on them that night, he said no. He then described suddenly hearing Marquise scream out.
Marquise, like, screamed out, like, "I think I got tased, I got tased."
Is that what made you stop doing whatever you're doing with the red-haired guy over here?
No, so, when D'Angelo and the red-haired guy were scuffling, I was just here. I was looking back and forth.
What happened when you heard him say, "I got tased"?
Me and D'Angelo proceeded to walk to Marquise. And then Marquise passed out.
Were you all then walking away from the situation at that point?
Yes, sir. Marquise passed out. He was snoring, kinda.
They picked up Marquise and put him in the back seat. They then drove away. And as they were driving, Marquise woke up and said, "Man, this shit hurts." They approached a light and saw a police car. So they pulled into the Jiffy Mart gas station. He didn't know how badly Marquise was hurt until the police told them to get out of the car. He told the court that calling the police never crossed his mind. He had a cell phone on him, but didn't call. A photo of Michael's bloody knuckle was displayed upon the big screen. He said that when he found out Marquise had died, he punched the wall at the gas station. On cross-examination, Michael admitted that it was true that he told detectives that he was mad about what happened, and that's why he went looking for the guys. But he said he just wanted someone to pay for the damage. He was asked how tall he and his friends are. He said they're all very tall, basketball players. He's 6'6", D'Angelo is 6'8", and Marquise was 6'9".
So three big dudes, right?
Yes, sir. We play basketball.
Yeah. And you're getting out in front of this guy's house and wanting to confront him about this damage to the vehicle that, by your own account, was pretty nerve-wracking and frightening when all that happened, right?
Yes, sir.
Michael was asked whether he was aware that the older man was on the phone with police while the fight was going on, and he said yes. He was asked if they had dumped any weapons they had on the way to the Jiffy Mart gas station, and he said no. D'Angelo Allen testified next. He recalled how he and Marquise were playing a video game on the night of March 1st, 2018, when Michael decided to go to the store. He estimated that he was gone for about 20 minutes before coming back. He described Michael as being in shock as he told them what had happened to him. Michael then asked them to ride with him as he went back there because he was scared, and so they did. They got into Michael's car and he said the windshield was smashed. They retraced the route Michael took, and as they were driving on a side street, they saw the silver Jeep in front of a house. There was an older man and a guy with red hair standing by it. They stopped the car and all three of them got out. He said Michael asked them why they threw a brick through his windshield, but no one responded. They continued asking why someone threw a brick at the car. The older man had a phone in his hand and he walked back towards the house. Marquise asked him, "Hey, where are you going?" And right as he said that, he said Marquise was attacked. Luke had come out of nowhere. They started tussling, and so he ran over to see if Marquise was okay. He said Marquise was holding his ground, so he ran over to see if Michael was okay. He saw the guy with the red hair, and he and the guy with the red hair started fighting. The guy with the red hair started running and then tripped. He got on top of him, and they continued fighting. He said he doesn't know where Marquise was at the time. But he heard Marquise yell out that he feels like he got tased. He was walking away towards the car.
As we're walking back toward the car, Marquise was still yelling out, I feel like I got tased. This hurt. I feel like, dang, I have tased. So me not knowing, I'm thinking he got tased. It's not no wires or anything on him or anything like that. So I kind of asked him, are you okay? And after a while, he kind of collapsed. He was on his feet. He was on his feet the whole time. Then, like, when we got to the car, he, like, kind of collapsed, like, you know. And that's when I asked, like, Michael, can you help me? Like, you know, something, like, you feel me? Something's going on. Something wrong.
They drove away and made it to the gas station. Once they were getting out of the car, he noticed that Marquise couldn't get out, but he was trying. When asked if he had any injuries from that night, he said no. On cross-examination, he was asked if he heard the older man say anything, and he said he heard him say that they are William Penn basketball players, but he doesn't recall him saying anything about calling the police or telling them that they were trespassing. He was also asked about inconsistencies in his testimony now versus what he told detectives. He admitted to telling the detectives that he and his friends were acting aggressively when they arrived at the house. He also said that he initially didn't tell them that he got into a scuffle with the red-haired guy. He said he had just pushed his face, but didn't admit to punching him. Then Luke's attorney, Alan Cook, asked D'Angelo about a question he had posed to one of the officers at the scene, essentially asking that since they had gone onto someone's property, did the property owners then have the right to do what they did? But D'Angelo said he had just been asking a question and that he didn't know Marquise was dead at that point. Officer John Plume testified that when he first arrived at the Van Hemert house, Luke had been wearing a blue sweatshirt. Officer Plume left at some point to go assist his fellow officers at the gas station while another officer remained at the house. He said when he returned, Luke was sitting on the couch with a trash can between his legs. It appeared as though he had been getting sick. Officer Plume noticed that Luke was dressed differently. He wasn't wearing that blue sweatshirt, and he had a red plaid jacket on. He told Luke that he needed that blue sweatshirt, and that another officer had noted that there was a tear in it. And Luke responded that the tear wasn't from the fight, but he agreed to get it for him. On cross-examination, Officer Plume clarified that he did not get the impression that Luke was trying to conceal the sweatshirt from him. Malcolm Turner, Marquise's stepdad since he was little, testified next. Malcolm said that he and his family live in Woodridge, Illinois, and that's where Marquise was initially from. He met Marquise's mom, Michelle, in 2000, when Marquise was 5 and Marquise's sister, Kim, was 10. A photo was shown to the jury. In it, a smiling Marquise was just starting his freshman year at Jackson State. Malcolm said he took the photo. It was the first week of school, and Marquise had received a scholarship to play basketball there before he ultimately ended up at William Penn. Malcolm's voice broke on the stand as he spoke about Marquise.
He He had visions of being a 6'9 pilot. He had visions of being a professional basketball player. He had visions of, you know, coming back to where he started and doing things for his people. He was raised that way. He was raised to protect his friends, his family. He was raised to be a stand-up man.
He noted that Marquise was 22 years old when he died, and that Marquise's own father was also murdered at the age of 22. In fact, he said Marquise wore the number 22 on his jersey in remembrance of his father. Lieutenant Gary McClume, another one of the first officers on the scene, testified about the initial version of events that Luke told him. He said Luke had entirely left out the part about throwing a brick through Michael's window or hitting his windshield with a pole. He was asked if Luke had mentioned anything about a knife or of having to defend himself, and he said no. On cross-examination, Lieutenant McClume was shown a photograph of a small pink wooden stake that had been found in the grass at the scene, next to a large amount of blood. McClume noted that Michael's car was said to have been in that same area. But he testified that he was more interested in another small wooden stake found at the scene, in the gravel driveway just in front of Luke's Jeep. This one also had a few drops of blood near it. He said he photographed this one because he thought it possibly could have been a weapon that had been used. A photo of Eli was then shown to the jury. Lieutenant McClume said he had a laceration on his lip and eyebrow, lacerations on his knuckles, and an abrasion on his knee. He testified that he didn't see any injuries on Luke, that he had asked Luke if he was injured or if he needed an ambulance, and Luke said no. When he spoke with Stanley, Luke's father, Stanley told him that Marquise and his friends had brought weapons, and he agreed that Stanley's description matched one of the stakes that was found. On redirect, the prosecutor pointed out that at one point, Luke went back inside the house to vomit, and that inside the home were Luke's girlfriend and mom, and that he did not interview either of them. On recross, Lieutenant McClume said that Luke was escorted by an officer when he went inside to vomit, and that no one impeded his ability to go inside the house or to search the scene. A man named Trinity Schaefer testified next. He said that on March 1st, 2018, he was living across the street from the Van Hemerts. He said he heard screaming coming from Luke's house, and that when he looked out of his window, he saw Luke and his friends chasing and yelling at the William Penn guys. He said he noticed the guys from William Penn then run across the street and get into a vehicle. He believed there were two of them. They got into their car and drove off, going back towards William Penn. A few minutes later, however, he said he heard a thud, a loud crashing noise. When he looked out, he saw Luke or one of his acquaintances swinging a stick or something at the car. It had come back. He then heard Luke screaming at the car. He recognized Luke's voice. He was screaming to come back and he'll kill them. Although he didn't say them, he used a racial slur. He said the car drove off and then came back again about 10 to 15 minutes later, a third time. He heard the car doors close and looked outside again. He saw the William Penn guys get out of their car. The two groups were yelling at each other, and a fight broke out. He said it was dark, that he couldn't see much, but he heard a female voice scream, "Stop, you're killing him, you're killing him." He said he didn't know who that was. He testified that the fight was very quick. He said afterwards, one of the William Penn guys pulled the other one to the back driver's side seat. They then closed the car door and drove off. He heard someone say they were calling the cops, and then he saw someone else running down the street. The police showed up a few minutes later. Trinity admitted on cross-examination that he was in jail when police contacted him about the case many months later. He was first interviewed in November 2018, about 8 months after it happened. He said he was confident that he saw four guys get out of the car that the William Penn guys were in. He also admitted to having told the detectives that he had been under the influence of meth and marijuana at the time he saw everything. Michael Halverson, a criminalist for the DCI Crime Lab, testified that he photographed Luke and collected his clothing on the night of the incident. He said he asked Luke if he had any wounds or scratches on him, and that Luke pointed out a scratch on his forearm, a red mark on the center of his forehead, and a welt on the corner of his right eyebrow. There were no injuries or marks to either the front or backs of either hand. Halverson testified that he also went to the Jiffy Mart gas station and collected items from the car that Marquise and his friends had been in. He said that around the passenger side of the car, there was red staining or blood on the ground, along with a metal hair clip that had been worn by Marquise. He noted scuff marks on the side of the car, along with a smashed windshield. There were apparent blood stains in the back seat and in the door jamb as you open up the driver's side rear door. A cell phone was located in the back seat pocket of the passenger seat, and there were glass shards lying on top of the dashboard. From the Van Hemert house, he collected a large rock from the driveway with a blood stain on it, a wooden stake found near Luke's silver Jeep with several shards of glass found stuck to it, a William Penn stocking cap, and a black Air Jordan tennis shoe. He said they also collected knives from the house and gave them to the police department, but none of them had any apparent blood stains on them. Another criminalist testified about blood found on Luke's sweatshirt. One usable profile matched the DNA of Marquise Todd. There was also blood found on the driver's side of Luke's Jeep, along with the inside of the house, and those blood stains matched Eli. The next witness prosecutors called to the stand was actually somebody else who they later learned had also been present during the confrontation, Luke's friend, Jeff Beard. The prosecutor started the direct examination by telling the jury that Jeff has a severe anxiety disorder, one that he has been previously hospitalized for. Jeff told the jury that on March 1st, 2018, he was with Luke and Eli, but he said he never came forward to police because he didn't feel as if he played a role in any of what happened. At about 9:30 p.m. on March 1st, he said they were on their way to McDonald's when they realized they had forgotten a credit card. They were almost back to Luke's house when he felt something hit them on the back passenger side. He said Luke and Eli got out of the vehicle, and Luke asked the other driver, "What the fuck did you just do?" He didn't remember, as he testified, what else was said, or if Eli and Luke approached the other car. But the prosecutor pointed out that when he had spoken with police, he told them that Luke had hit the car with his hand. Jeff said that afterwards, the car backed away and left. They were pretty much in front of Luke's house at that point, and so he went into Luke's house to tell his dad, Stanley, what had happened. He said he told him that there had just been a collision, and he wanted to let him know so he could see what was going on. They both then went back outside. The car was still backing up very erratically, he said, spinning around, trying to get out of the area. He testified that he saw the car come back at one point, and he recalled seeing Luke throw a brick at it. He then heard the driver say that he was going to be back. The prosecutor asked him about something he told the police during his interview. He had said that after the car drove away that second time, that Luke had come into the house and said, "We have to ready up." Jeff said that was taken out of context, but that it was in reference to making sure that Jeff was able to go home because Luke knew that he had wanted to leave. When asked to explain how that could mean Jeff getting home, he said, "I don't know how to explain it, sir." After Luke said that, Luke then went upstairs. Jeff remained downstairs with Stanley. He wasn't sure what Eli was doing at the time. Stanley suggested calling the police. In an interview with detectives, Jeff had said that Luke then came downstairs and said, "Don't worry about calling the police. We'll handle it." Jeff told the court that he just wanted to get home. Before he left, Luke gave him some drug paraphernalia from the house to take with him. So he took the items and then started walking home. He went along the back side of the house. He said he didn't notice that the car was back outside as he was leaving. He said he was more concerned about getting home to his wife than anything else. When he left, everyone was still inside the house. When he got to the edge of the trees down the street is when he heard a commotion. He heard yelling but couldn't make out what was being said. He turned around and went back towards the house. He told the jury that he saw Eli fall to the ground and saw someone get on top of him. It was dark outside, so he couldn't tell what anyone looked like. He got scared and went to go yell to try and get the guy off of Eli. He was scared that they would come after him, so he then bolted back home. He did not see Luke or Stanley at all. He only saw Eli and the person on top of him. Jeff was shown a photo of a knife that police had recovered by the trees. He identified it as his knife and said it must have fallen out of his pocket. When asked what he had done with the paraphernalia, he said he destroyed it a couple weeks later. Jeff told the court that the first time he heard that someone had been killed was on Facebook. He then asked Luke what happened and said Luke didn't give him a response. But the prosecutor pointed out that to detectives, Jeff had told them that when he asked Luke about it, Luke just smiled at him and said, "You don't need to know."
And so he smiled while he was telling you, "You don't need to know."
Yeah, and from what I was assuming, he was
on Facebook. I want to know what you were assuming about what he was doing. I just want to know what you saw.
He was on Facebook.
All right. But he smiled and said, "You don't need to know." That's what you told the police, right?
Like I said before, doors are misconstrued.
I don't want to know what you said before. I want you to answer my question. When you asked him what happened, his response was to be smiling at that time and saying, "You don't need to know."
Yes.
Okay.
On cross-examination, Jeff said that the person who was on top of Eli had an object that appeared to have a curve to it, similar to a crowbar. He said he thought Eli was going to die, and that's why he yelled out. He testified that the knife he dropped was his and said Luke did not give it to him. He also said that he didn't ask for anyone to keep him out of this. Don Schnitger, a special agent with the DCI, interviewed Luke at the Oskaloosa Police Department shortly after 2 a.m. the night of the fight. That interrogation video was played in court. In the video, Luke described the encounters he had with Marquise, D'Angelo, and Michael to Agent Schnitger and Lieutenant Troy Boston, but he only described two encounters, the minor traffic accident, and then when Michael and his friends returned to the house. He said he was driving his Jeep Cherokee right by his house when a silver car pulled up quickly behind him. He said they went to the side of him and he thought they were going to pass, but instead the car hit him. He got out to see what had happened and to talk to the driver, but the guy just drove off. He said this happened just a few feet from his driveway, so he pulled in there. He went inside and told his dad what happened. They were out in the front yard with his dad, looking at the damage to the Jeep, when the guy, along with some friends, came back. He said they told him, "I'm going to beat your ass." He said he got pushed down and was maybe punched in the shoulder, but that was it. He said he didn't have any injuries, that his shoulder was the only thing that was maybe a little sore. After the altercation, he said the guys got up, yelled out more profanities, and then left. He noted that one of the guys looked like he was hurt and that it looked like one of them was carrying something, a stick of some sort, or a pole that was about 2 to 3 feet long. When asked if the guy he fought had the pole, he said he didn't think so. He told the detectives that neither he nor his friends had any weapons on them. The detectives pressed him on whether he's leaving something out, and he said no, that's everything. They asked that if one of the guys had gotten stabbed, who he thought could have done that, and he said none of them. Luke was asked if afterwards anyone in his group talked about having stabbed anyone, and Luke said no. They just asked each other if they were okay. Eli was bleeding a little, but other than that, they were all good. Could Eli have stabbed him and you not seen that? He was asked. I don't know, it's possible, I guess, he said. But he said Eli doesn't carry a knife. The officers left the room for a few minutes, and when they came back, they said, you're aware that one of the guys passed away from his injuries, right? And Luke nodded. They told him that because of that, they really need to figure out how that happened, that they're going to get a search warrant for his house, his car, and his clothing. But they say they're going to do the same with the other guys, and that it's pretty standard. The interview ended with the officers telling Luke that it's time to tell the truth about what happened, but Luke maintained that he told them everything. He seemed very relieved to be able to go home. Dr. Dennis Klein performed the autopsy on Marquise. He said Marquise was stabbed 3 times. One wound went through his left arm, and the fatal wound entered into the chest and damaged his heart. He testified that the stab wounds plus a contusion on his shin were the only injuries. There were no injuries on either of his hands nor on his face. He also told the court that he could not determine the exact position Marquise was in when the wounds were inflicted. After Dr. Klein's testimony, the state then rested their case. And then it was the defense's turn. Now that you've heard what the prosecution witnesses had to say about that night, we'll now hear from the defense. Luke, his father Stanley, and Eli will all testify about what they say happened. First up, Eli Marcus, Luke's friend with the red hair, who was also involved in the altercation that night. He testified that he had been living at Luke's house for a few months, renting a room from them. He said he was with Luke and Jeff Beard that night.
And was there a point while you were out in Luke's Jeep where there was some kind of collision with another vehicle?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
Well, we actually forgot money for the McDonald's, so we were on our way back to the house. And while we were about to pull into the driveway, a car collided with our right passenger, our driver's side.
Okay. Had you noticed the vehicle before it actually made contact with Luke's Jeep?
I noticed the car following pretty fast behind us coming down the hill when we were about to the bottom of the hill.
He told the court that they weren't trying to cut the other car off at all, that they were just trying to pull into the driveway. After the impact, he and Luke got out of the Jeep and asked the driver why he had hit them. They got within 3 to 4 feet from the car when the driver ended up backing up down the road and turning around.
Were you upset?
Slightly upset, you know, it was a car accident, but, you know, nothing major.
Okay. Do you recall yelling or screaming at the vehicle?
I might have yelled something.
Okay. As you sit here today?
I don't recall what I said.
Okay.
Eli told the court that he never mentioned Jeff to the police because Jeff wasn't involved in the fight, so he didn't see a reason to mention him. He said Jeff also got their drug paraphernalia out of the house and that he didn't want to mention that to the cops. He said after the minor car accident, Luke went into the house to wake up his dad while he moved the Jeep from the street. Stanley got dressed and he and Eli went outside. He said Luke and Jeff then went upstairs to grab the drug paraphernalia, and then Luke walked Jeff to Jeff's house. After about 5 minutes, the Chevrolet came back while he and Stanley were standing outside. He said he saw Luke running from the back of the house, and he saw the car swerve towards Luke as though it was going to hit him. It then corrected itself, and he saw the car turn his way, and he thought the car was going to come at him. So he grabbed a tree branch that was laying at the side of the road, and he hit the windshield with it. He didn't know if the tree branch did any damage, but he said the branch exploded in his hand. He wasn't aware of any other damage to the car. He did not see the rock being thrown. He told the court that he never told police that he had swung the branch at the windshield. He said he didn't want to get charged with destruction of property. After he smashed the windshield, the vehicle then left. He heard the driver say, "If I can't get you alone, I'll come back with my boys." He didn't see it again for maybe another 5 minutes. He and Stanley were still inspecting the damage to the Jeep in the driveway and talking about what had happened when the car came back a third time. This time, it stopped by the driveway and three males got out. He said he noticed that they were quite a bit taller than him. They were yelling as they approached. He said Stanley told them to leave the property and then turned and started walking back to the house.
After Stan, you know, took a few steps away from the middle of the driveway where we were standing, the third one of them followed him.
Okay. And what about the other two? What did they do?
They were kind of, you know, standing in front of me, kind of cornered by Stan's Jeep.
So you had your back towards Stan's Jeep, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and not Hook's Jeep. Stan's is the black one?
Yes, Stan has a newer Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Okay. And is that the around the time that you said that one of them came up to you?
Yes.
And then what happened?
One of them, that was around the time. I stepped back and looked at Stan, and then one of them said, "Where are you going?" So I stepped back to where I was and looked back, and that's when he punched me. So I punched him back, and I saw an opening between the two to where I could take to, you know, maybe the side door of the house if it was unlocked or the front door, and that's the route I took.
He said he didn't know where Luke was at the time. He tried to go between the two guys to get to the side door. He got past them, and as soon as he got on the driveway, he lost his footing and fell down. After he fell down, he said he doesn't know much of what happened. He got hit a few times and blacked out. He remembered coming to and trying to grab someone's leg and then pushing them against one of the cars. He said something hit him on the head, and then the next thing he knows, the guys were back in their car, driving away. He said he blacked out then for at least 2 minutes. Eli described his injuries to the jury. He had a swollen eye, a pretty fat lip, and his back hurt pretty bad, he said. However, he was not aware of all of the injuries when he first talked to police. He was aware of all the marks on his face, but later became aware that there was a big bruise on his lower to mid back. Luke's attorney had him hold up the shirt he was wearing that night. He pointed to a mark on the back of his shirt and said it looks like dirt or rust from a metal object. He said it was definitely something that came off something that hit his back. Eli then testified that afterwards he went inside and collapsed in the middle of the living room and laid there for about 2 minutes before he got up again. He then went outside to smoke a cigarette. Stanley was on the phone with the police and Luke was smoking a cigarette too. Eli recalled that there were a few wooden stakes that he didn't remember being there, one off the side of the driveway and another in between the tree and the yard. On cross-examination, Eli said that during the third and final confrontation, he didn't know where Luke was, never saw him in any kind of altercation, and never saw him with a weapon. After the fight, as he and Luke were outside waiting for the police to come, he said Luke was acting normally and didn't appear to be angry or scared. He was asked if Luke told him that he had just been assaulted. He said no. That he had been acting in self-defense? He said no. He said he actually didn't even know about the fight between Luke and Marquise until he was at the police station. Eli admitted that prior to the trial, he had been able to review the police reports and could see what other witnesses had said. While waiting for trial, Luke had sent everything he had been given to his father at the house where Eli was living too, so he looked through everything as well. Eli was questioned about why they wanted to remove the drug paraphernalia after a minor car crash. Why would they be expecting the cops to come inside?
You would describe this damage as somewhat minor to your vehicle, or to, excuse me, the defendant's vehicle.
Yes, sir.
You didn't think it totaled the car or anything of that nature?
No.
But yet, after this minor collision, you expected that the police may be inside your home?
Yes. It wouldn't be the first time the police had used an excuse as this to, you know, raid a house.
Photos of Michael's vehicle with the windshield smashed were again displayed on the screen. Eli had testified on direct that he had hit the windshield with a tree branch because the car was coming at him. But on cross, he admitted that he didn't tell police that in his interviews. Luke's father, Stanley Van Hemert, took the stand next. He said he was sleeping in his bed when either Jeff, Eli, or Luke knocked on his door and woke him up. He was told that there had been an accident, so he got dressed and went outside to look at the vehicle. He and Eli were standing there in the driveway when they saw the car pull up. They walked to the edge of the driveway to meet them.
What did you notice about the people that got out?
They were very big people, tall, and I noticed one of them had something in his hand.
Okay. So a moment ago you said that you were sort of meeting them at the driveway. What was your intention at that point?
Just to talk about the accident, what had happened.
Okay. Did your approach change?
My approach did not, no.
Okay. Well, here, that's not a very good question. At first, you're hoping to talk about this accident, correct?
Yes.
You seen these people emerge from the car. Did you still want to talk about the accident at that point?
No, because they were being very aggressive.
Okay. And did you see anything in anybody's hands when they got out of the vehicle?
Yes, I saw. I seen something in one of their hands.
All right. In response to these guys getting out of the car, did you or Eli do anything? Pick anything up or anything?
Before they had stopped, Eli had picked up a rock and I told him to drop it.
He said he told the guys getting out of the car that this was not going to happen here, that they needed to stay off his property, and that he's going to call the police. Then he turned around and started walking to the front door. He said with the way they were acting, he figured there was going to be a confrontation. One of the guys, who he now knows as Marquise, followed him. As he was calling 911, he was looking over his shoulder, and he said Marquise came at him.
And when you look back, what did you see?
I see one of them following me. He was probably two steps back behind me off to my left.
Was he moving slowly or quickly, in your opinion?
He was moving about the same pace I was.
And how big was this person?
Oh, he was huge. He was probably a foot taller than me.
So you're looking over your shoulder and these are the observations that you're making, is that correct?
Correct.
Did you do anything in response?
Nope, just kept walking toward the front door.
Okay.
And making my call to 911.
He said he got to the front door and turned around.
I got to the front door, and I turned around, and Luke had already made contact with the person behind me because he thought he was going to hit me.
Objection. I get the last part because it's calling for speculation, but Luke thought that's that part he's stricken from the
record. Objection sustained. The portion beginning, Luke had already made contact with the person behind me because he thought he was going to hit me, is stricken from the record, and the jury will disregard. Go ahead, Mr. Crow.
Thank you, Your Honor. Do you recall anything that Mr. Todd, if anything, was saying to you at the time?
No.
Okay. So by the time that you turned around, Luke and Mr. Todd are already engaged, is that correct?
Yes.
Do you recall who threw the first punch?
I did not see who threw the first punch.
Okay. Do you believe that you saw the entire confrontation between Luke and Mr. Todd?
No.
Okay. Can you tell the jury about what you were able to see?
I seen Mr. Todd hit Luke a couple times in the face.
Okay. Do you recall what Luke did, if anything?
No. At the point where he was at, it looked like he was falling to the ground.
Other than that, he said he doesn't remember anything else. He said he was also focused on calling 911 and checking on Eli to see if he was doing okay. He was asked what he told the 911 dispatcher. He said he told them that there were three black assailants coming at them, that one had something in his hands, and that it all started because of an accident. When police showed up, he said he told them the same thing, likely more in detail. He did not know that Luke had stabbed anyone at this point. He only learned about that the next day. On cross-examination, Stanley said he was aware of the drug paraphernalia being collected by Luke and Jeff and taken from the home. He said they had basically just smashed the windshield, so he thought the police would be coming. He said he didn't call the police at that time, but that he assumed that the guys would. He was then asked why, if he thought the guys had called the police, why he would then be afraid that they were going to beat them up when they arrived then. He told the court that police came about 8 minutes after he made the 911 call. He was adamant that Luke did not leave during that time and that he didn't see him hand anything to anyone. Next up to the stand was Luke Van Hemert. He recounted to the jury the initial confrontation. He said he noticed the Chevrolet coming up pretty fast behind them. He was getting ready to turn into the driveway when the Chevrolet tried to pass him and sideswiped the car. So he stopped his Jeep, got out, and asked the man what the hell was going on. He described himself as being elevated and upset, but said he wasn't yelling. He said the guy then backed down the road and left. He said he didn't recall Eli slapping the hood. The second time the car came back, he said it swerved at him and hopped the curb. When it did that, he threw a rock at it. After he hit the car with the rock, the car just kept going. He said he didn't see Eli hit the car with the branch. Jeff was on his way home with all the paraphernalia from the house at that point, so he went behind his house to check on Jeff. He saw him walking, so he knew he was heading home. He then turned around and went back. The car was just approaching the house at that point for the third time and stopped just in front of the house. He said he didn't want to escalate anything and that he was scared, so he decided to just stay where he was and watch. He assumed they couldn't see him.
So you just stayed where you were at. What were you feeling at that point?
I was scared.
Why?
Because there's three huge guys there that already came by a couple times, so I didn't know what they were going to do.
Do you think you were going to get hurt?
Yeah, somebody was going to get hurt.
Did you actually see the car pull up? Were you actually at the house by that point, or was it already stopped by the time you first noticed the car?
It was just pulling up.
Okay. What did you observe about the car?
There was like a break in the windshield, and that's all I really noticed about it.
All right. Did you notice anybody getting out of the car?
Three guys, yes.
Can you describe the guys?
Only thing I can tell you is they're huge guys, way taller than I was, way bigger than me. So I didn't want to escalate the situation, so I stayed at the side of the house.
Okay. Could you tell, what were the lighting conditions over at your house that night?
It was dark.
Okay. Could you see anything as far as what the guys in the car were wearing?
All I can remember is hoodies or sweatshirts.
Okay. And were the hoodies up or down, do you recall?
Up.
He saw one of the guys start walking towards the driveway. He heard cussing and heard them say they were going to beat their asses and that someone needed to pay for their car. He was still at the side of the house at this point. He heard his father say that nothing needed to happen here, that he was going to call the police. But the men continued to advance. As he was observing this, he could hear his dad telling them to back off, but they wouldn't. He said he was terrified.
You hear your dad make these statements. Your dad starts coming towards the house. Do you recall if your dad had anything in his hand at all?
Yes, his cell phone.
Okay, and you specifically recall that?
Yes.
All right. And then one of the three started to follow him?
Correct.
The guy who he said was following him was Marquise. His dad got close to the front door, and Marquise was within 3 feet of him. He said Marquise put his hands up to get ready to fight him. He saw Marquise try to swing at his dad, and so he ran over and tried to tackle him.
Did Mr. Todd, this person that you later knew to be Mr. Todd, did he acknowledge that you were there, or did he just blindsided and you tried to do something to him?
No, he's seen me
He's hit me.
How do you know he saw you?
Because he turned his body and had his hands up, still ready to fight me.
Okay. What happened then?
I tried tackling him, and that didn't work because he's a big guy, so he didn't move an inch when I tried tackling him.
Okay.
And then he kind of wraps his right arm around my waist or whatnot, whatever it was, and with his left hand, he starts punching me in the face and inside the head.
He said he was scared for his life at that point.
How many times while you're still upright do you think that you got struck?
Probably 5 times.
Okay. And where were you struck about your body?
In my forehead, my face, and on top of my head.
Okay. After getting struck, what you said, about 5 times, is that
correct?
Recollection?
Correct.
After getting struck about 5 times, what are you thinking at that point?
I'm thinking I need to get away from this situation because I'm just going to get hurt.
So what did you do?
I kind of forced myself to the ground.
You're trying to pull away from him?
Correct.
Okay. Did that work?
Well, I fell to the ground, and I figured maybe if I fell to the ground, I might be able to roll away or get away from him somehow, but as I fell, he fell on top of me.
Okay. And when you fell to the ground, how were you positioned on the ground?
I was on my left arm, kind of. Wasn't on my stomach or nothing, but I was midway.
Why could you see the ground?
Because I was laying on the ground with my arm out.
Okay. Could you see how Mr. Todd was positioned at that point?
No, but I could feel it. Like he was holding me down with his hand.
Okay. Were you continuing? Was anything else going on other than him holding you down?
Yes, he was still punching me in the face and inside of the head.
He told the jury that he was fearful for his life and for his dad's. He said he did not have the knife in his hand at that point, but that it was in his pocket. He said it was just a pocket knife, nothing special about it.
When the police searched your house, they found several pocket knives, isn't that true?
Yes.
Okay. But when you first approached Mr. Todd, that was not in your hand, correct?
Correct.
Was the first action you took against Mr. Todd to try to stab him?
No, sir, it was not.
What did you try to do first?
I tried taking him down.
After he swung at you?
Correct.
Okay. And you said that was not effective at all?
Not at all, sir.
All right.
He then finally described how he stabbed him.
At that point, I retrieved my pocket knife from my pocket and swung it upwards a few times.
Okay. Could you see where you were striking?
No, sir.
Did you know if you were even hitting him or not?
No, sir.
Okay. Did Mr. Todd quit hitting you shortly after you started swinging your knife?
Yes, he did.
Okay. What happened then?
From what I can recall, he gets off me and walks back to the car or goes somewhere.
Okay. Now let's back up a minute. When you go to the ground, you're trying to get away, right?
Correct.
And you said earlier that was not successful. He was still right on top of you, correct?
Right.
What are you feeling at that point?
I feel like I'm fighting for my life at that point.
Okay. And he's still striking you, correct?
Correct, over and over again.
Okay. Are you aware of anything that was going on during that fight that stopped Mr. Todd from hitting you other than you trying to stab at him?
No, that's what stopped the fight.
Okay.
After Marquise got up and started walking towards the car, Luke said he was relieved that he had stopped hitting him and that he didn't have to fight for his life anymore.
Did you come to any realizations at that point?
At that point, I realized there's a good chance I stabbed this guy.
Okay. What were you feeling at that point?
Scared, panicked.
What did you do?
I got up, ran through the back lot behind my house, and threw the knife.
Okay. Do you know exactly where you threw the knife?
Somewhere behind the track, somewhere.
Okay. How long do you think that took?
30 seconds.
Cops?
Yeah, I'd say.
Okay. Did anyone notice you were even gone?
No.
Okay. This was before the police got to your house, correct?
Correct. My dad was on the phone with the police.
Okay. When you you returned from throwing the knife, was your dad still on the phone from calling the police?
Yes, sir, he was.
He said his dad didn't even know that he had left. He told the court that he didn't tell anyone about what happened that night. After he left the police station after his interview, he then told his dad. But he didn't tell them what he did with the knife, just told him that he had stabbed someone with it. He said he didn't tell police about the knife because he was scared. He was scared that because he threw the knife away, that it would look bad. He said the knife Jeff Beard had that fell out of his pocket was not the knife he used. On cross-examination, the prosecutor asked him to read out loud the written statement he gave to police prior to his interview.
I was coming up 3rd Street, going south, when a silver car sped up next to me, hitting my Jeep. He left, came back with friends, one pushed me down, then went to beat up Eli, then left.
He said it was correct that that was essentially everything he told the police. He didn't mention Michael's car swerving to hit him, as he and Eli were saying now, and he left out the stabbing entirely. He was asked to again describe how the stabbing occurred. He again described being on the ground, facing the ground, with Marquise on top of him, punching him in the face. He reached up with his right hand and was swinging upward with the knife.
And he's supposedly hitting you, and you stab him through, all the way through his arm, all the way through his chest and into his heart.
I don't know, sir. I wasn't looking at him.
Also possible that he is following your father toward the door. You're over here, and you come at him with a knife and stab him in the shoulder and stab him in the heart and kill him with no warning. Right?
No, sir.
Well, your dad said the fight was over before it started. You heard him testify to that.
Yes.
Right? Didn't sound to me, did it to you, that you had time to get punched 6 or 7 times and wrestle around, get thrown on the ground, and reach into your pocket. Was it an open knife?
What do you mean, open
well,
knife?
Well, it wasn't a buck knife, right?
No, I had to open it, yes.
All right, so now you're getting pummeled on the ground, and somehow you managed to get this knife out, you managed to open it up, and start stabbing while you're getting pummeled by this guy, supposedly, right?
Yes, sir.
Story?
Yes, sir.
The police practically begged you to tell them that you were acting in self-defense, didn't they? The prosecutor asked. Yes, Luke replied. Yet he only told them that he had gotten pushed down, and that was it. The prosecutor then asked if Luke was specifically asked in the interview whether any of the men came after his dad, and if he said, I don't think so. Luke said he didn't recall that, and so the prosecutor played that part of the interview for him, and he agreed. That's what he said. The prosecutor asked why, if Marquise and his friends had really tried to hit him with their car, tried attacking his dad, and hitting him to where he thought he was going to die, why he would leave those parts out when talking to the police. Luke said it was a scary situation and that he didn't want to talk about it. In their closing arguments, the prosecutor told the jury that Luke's story was not believable.
The defendant, who didn't have his knife out already, while supposedly being beaten on the ground with this 6'8", 6'6", 6'10" person on top of him, hitting him, manages to get his knife out of his pocket, open his knife, and then kill him? And that all had to happen within Mr. Van Hemert's time frame of it having been over before it started. You're the judges of the believability of the evidence and of the witnesses, and whether it makes any darn sense. Reality cannot be suspended for you, unfortunately. You'll have to decide whether this story jives at all with reality. Is this story the truth, which is your job to seek? Is it consistent with the other evidence in this case? Is it even plausible? Or is the truth that the defendant sprang from darkness, armed with a knife, fixed upon doing deadly harm,
to one of these people.
In their closing arguments, Luke's attorney maintained that the stabbing was justified.
He was more than justified when using that reasonable force. He realized that wasn't enough. He was losing the fight in his own front yard. And at that point, it became necessary to exercise deadly force, and he did so to protect his own life. You heard him testify about the gamut of emotions he went through all this, how the fear kept escalating until he felt he had no other choice but then to defend his life. My client was forced to make this decision, and had Mr. Todd not made the choices that he did, my client would have never been forced to make the decisions he did.
The jury deliberated for just an hour and a half before announcing they had reached a verdict.
In the state of Iowa versus Luke Ryan Van Hemert, we, the jury, find the defendant, Luke Ryan Van Hemert, guilty of the crime of murder in the second degree. Signed, presiding juror.
Luke was then sentenced to 50 years in prison. And that's all for this episode. As always, I'd love to know what you think. Do you agree with the verdict that Luke intentionally stabbed Marquise? Or do you believe that he was really acting in self-defense? Do you think his sentence is fair? You can let me know by joining the conversation on Instagram at Court Junkie, by tweeting me at Court Junkie Pod, or by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.